After what you've just heard, I hope there may already be arising in your mentation a corresponding association which should finally lead you, as sometimes happens with certain people, to what you call understanding. And then you will understand why I, well knowing, having often been touched by this human property, whose inevitable manifestation is, if anybody pays money for something, he's bound to use it to the end, was animated in my whole presence by the idea that arose in my mentation of taking every possible measure so that you, my brother in appetite and in spirit, as they say, in the event of your being accustomed to reading books written exclusively in the language of the intelligentsia, having already paid money for my writings, and discovering only afterwards that they are not written in the usual convenient and easily read language, should not be compelled to read them through to the end at any cost, as our poor Transcaucasian Kurd was compelled to go on eating what he had fancied for its appearance alone, that not-to-be-joked-with noble red pepper. And so, to avoid any misunderstanding on account of this property, which arises from data formed in the presence of contemporary man, thanks to his frequenting the cinema, and never missing an opportunity of looking into the left eye of persons of the other sex, I wish to have this opening chapter of mine printed in the said manner so that everyone can read it through without cutting the pages of the book itself. Otherwise, the bookseller will, as he said, cavil and behave without fail according to the basic principle of all booksellers, formulated in the following words: "You are more a fool than a fisherman if you let go the fish that has swallowed the bait, and will decline to take back a book whose pages have been cut. I have no doubt that this would happen. Indeed, I fully expect such lack of conscience on the part of the booksellers. My certainty about this lack of conscience on the part of the booksellers comes from data formed in me during the period when I was a professional Indian fakir. And in order to clarify a certain ultra-philosophical question, I had to become familiar with the associative process of the manifestation of the automatically constructed psyche of contemporary booksellers and their salesmen when palming off books on their buyers. Knowing all this, and having become, since the accident that befell me, just and fastidious in the extreme, I cannot help repeating, or rather, I cannot help warning you again, and even insistently advising you, before beginning to cut the pages of this first book of mine, to read very attentively, even more than once, this first chapter of my writings. But if, notwithstanding this warning of mine, you still wish to become acquainted with the rest of my expositions, there is nothing left for me but to wish you with all my genuine soul a very, very good appetite, and that you may digest everything you read, not only for your own health, but for the health of all those near you. I said, with my genuine soul, because recently, living here in Europe, and frequently meeting people who on every appropriate and inappropriate occasion are fond of taking in vain sacred names that belong only to man's inner life, that is to say, of swearing to no purpose, and being, as I have already confessed, a follower, not only in theory like contemporary people, but also in practice of the sayings of popular wisdom, established throughout the centuries, among which is one that corresponds to the present case and is expressed in the words, "When you are in Rome, do as the Romans." In order not to be out of harmony with the custom established here in Europe of swearing in ordinary conversation, and at the same time to act according to the commandment enunciated by the holy lips of Saint Moses, not to take the sacred names in vain, I decided to make use of one of the oddities of that freshly baked, fashionable language called English. And each time the occasion requires it, to swear by my English soul. The point is that in this fashionable language, the word for soul and the word for the bottom of the foot, also soul, S-O-L-E, are pronounced and even written almost alike. I don't know how it is for you, who are already half a candidate for a buyer of my writings, but as for me, no matter how great my mental desire, my peculiar nature cannot avoid being indignant at this manifestation of people of contemporary civilization, whereby the very highest in man, particularly beloved by our common Father Creator, can be named, and indeed often understood, as that which is lowest and dirtiest in man. Well, enough of philologizing. Let us return to the main task of this initial chapter, intended, among other things, to stir up my drowsy thoughts, as well as yours, and also to give you a warning. I have already composed in my head the plan and sequence of my intended expositions. But what form they will take on paper, speaking frankly, I do not yet know with any consciousness. But in my subconscious, I already definitely feel that on the whole, they will take the form of something, so to say, hot, and will act on the common presence of every reader, just as the red pepper pods did on that poor Transcaucasian Kurd. Now that you have become familiar with the story of our common countryman, the Transcaucasian Kurd, I consider it my duty to make a confession to you. Before going on with this first chapter, which serves as an introduction to all that I plan to write, I wish to inform your so-called pure waking consciousness of the fact that in the chapters following this warning, I shall expound my thoughts intentionally in such a sequence and with such logical confrontation that the essence of certain real ideas may pass automatically from this waking consciousness, which most people in their ignorance mistake for the real consciousness, but which I affirm and experimentally prove is the fictitious one, into what you call the subconscious, which, in my opinion, ought to be the real human consciousness. In order that these concepts may mechanically bring about by themselves that transformation which in general should proceed in the common presence of a man, and give him, by means of his own active mentation, the results proper to him as a man, and not merely as a one- or two-brained animal. I decided to do this without fail, so that this introductory chapter, intended, as I have already said, to awaken your consciousness, may fully justify its purpose in reaching not only your, in my opinion, fictitious consciousness, but also your real consciousness, that is to say, what you call your subconscious, and may compel you, for the first time, to reflect actively. In the presence of every man, irrespective of his heredity and education, There are formed two independent consciousnesses, having almost nothing in common, either in their functioning or in their manifestations. One consciousness is formed from the perception of all kinds of mechanical impressions arising accidentally or deliberately, produced by others, including almost all words, which are indeed only empty sounds. And the other consciousness is formed partly from the previously fixed material results transmitted to a man by heredity, which have become blended with the corresponding parts of his common presence, and partly from his intentionally evoked associative confrontations of these materialized results. This second human consciousness, which in itself, as well as in its manifestations, is none other than what is called the subconscious, and which is formed, as I've just said, from the materialized results of heredity and the confrontations produced by a man's own intention. This is the one that, in my opinion, based on many years of experimental investigations carried out under exceptionally favorable conditions, which should predominate in his common presence. In view of this conviction of mine, which doubtless seems to you the fantasy of an afflicted mind, I cannot now, as you yourself see, disregard this second consciousness, and am thus obliged, by my essence, to construct this first chapter of my writings, which should serve as a preface for all that follows, in such a way that it will reach, and in the manner required for my aim, ruffle the perceptions accumulated in both these consciousnesses of yours. Continuing my exposition with this idea in mind, I must first of all inform your fictitious consciousness that, thanks to three definite and peculiar psychic data crystallized in my common presence during my preparatory age, I am really unique at, so to say, muddling and befuddling all the notions and convictions supposedly firmly fixed in the presence of people with whom I come in contact.